From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm David Byrd reporting. More than 120 people are dead after a series of attacks in Paris Friday night. A large number of people were held hostage at a concert hall. Police later stormed the building, and French police say at least 100 people were killed there. President François Hollande has declared a state of emergency and ordered France's borders closed, an unprecedented act in 21st century Europe. Speaking through an interpreter, Mr. Hollande said the French public should trust police and other authorities to handle the situation.
I'm asking here for you to maintain your trust in what the security forces can do to protect the populations from terrorist attacks. Long live the Republic, long live France.
One of the first bombings was just outside a sports stadium where President Hollande and a crowd of thousands were watching a football match between France and Germany. Attackers also targeted restaurants and bars in a crowded central area of the French capital. At the White House, President Barack Obama said the coordinated attacks in Paris were an outrageous attempt to terrorize civilians.
This is an attack on all of humanity and the universal values that we share. We stand prepared and ready to provide whatever assistance that the government and the people of France need to respond.
The French police said late Friday that they believe all of the attackers involved in the shootings and bombings in Paris are dead. Michel Cadeau, the head of the Paris police, said that while all of the attackers are believed to have died, authorities are searching for possible accomplices in the attacks that left more than 120 dead. This is VOA News. Patrick Kennedy is an adjunct professor of political sciences at Sciences Po in Paris. He was in a cafe in the 10th arrondissement when Friday's attacks occurred. He said from the French capital that people there are in a state of shock.
It seems, you know, initially there's a sense of frustration. You know, I saw actually a bar fight or someone screaming at each other right when I walked outside. And there's just a kind of disillusionment, sense of anger and frustration, I think, in the early stages, especially when the information is not very clear. I really kind of feel a sense it's very emotional here right now. I saw a few people kind of crying as they had reports, and you could tell that perhaps they knew people in the area and they were really kind of scared. So there's this kind of this overwhelming sense of frustration, of emotion. I'm not really sure what emotion there is, but it's just a process of trying to figure out exactly what was happening. Why was this happening again in Paris?
Kennedy said that many people are concerned that they will not be able to get home after being ordered to stay in place, but that they are cooperating with authorities. No one has claimed responsibility for the deadly attacks in Paris. VOA National Security correspondent Jeff Selden says that attacks like Friday's in the French capital require a great deal of coordination, which is not characteristic of either Islamic State or Al-Qaeda's operations in Western Europe.
Some of the analysts I've been talking to are saying that, look, this type of attack with the mass scale is not easy to carry out. It requires a lot of planning, and it shows more sophistication in terms of that planning, in terms of that organization, than anything they've seen so far from either the Islamic State or even recently from Al-Qaeda, specifically with those groups outside of areas, outside of countries where they have strongholds. And again, this is an attack in Western Europe, and nothing like this has been seen in quite some time in terms of the sophistication.
That's VOA's national security correspondent, Jeff Selden. World leaders have responded with shock and outrage to the attacks in Paris. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said she was deeply shaken by the news from the French capital. Russian President Vladimir Putin said in a statement he sent his deep condolences to the people of France and said Russia stands ready to provide any and all assistance needed. British Prime Minister David Cameron said he was shocked by the events in the French capital. He said Britain will do whatever it can to help. And the U.S. Embassy in Paris is making every effort to account for U.S. citizens in the city. U.S. citizens can call 1-888-407-4747 from the United States or 202-501-4444 from overseas. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
It is Saturday, November the 14th. This is a VOA International Edition special, Terror Attacks in Paris. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Terrorists did stage multiple simultaneous attacks in Paris on Friday night, killing scores of people with automatic gunfire and explosions. Large number of people were being held hostage at a concert hall where performance was interrupted by automatic rifle rapid fire. Up to thousands of people were in that audience at the time. Many escaped, but it's not clear how many were taken hostage or executed. President François Hollande said he was declaring a state of emergency and ordering France's borders closed. That is an unprecedented act in the 21st century Europe.
I'm asking here for you to maintain your trust in what the security forces can do to protect the populations from terrorist attacks. Long live the Republic. Long live France.
At the White House, President Obama said the coordinated attacks in Paris were an outrageous attempt to terrorize civilians.
This is an attack on all of humanity and the universal values that we share. We stand prepared and ready to provide whatever assistance that the government and the people of France need to respond.
At the United Nations, a spokesman said that Secretary General Ban Ki-moon condemned the attacks by saying Friday's assault evoked memories of an attack by Islamist gunmen in January that killed 17 people at the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. So far, no one has claimed responsibility. And on that note, we join a conversation now on Skype. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden held with Brookings Institution terror analyst J.M. Berger.
We don't know who's responsible for this. The last time there was a major terrorist attack in Paris, it was Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Certainly it's very possible that ISIS is involved in this, but, you know, right now we don't have the facts. It's a live situation. Everything's still unfolding, and we're going to have to wait until we know more.
Does the scope of what's played out of the apparent attack surprise you at all? Were multiple locations, multiple explosions, not all in just one area?
Well, it's a very sophisticated attack, certainly more sophisticated than we've seen from ISIS and more sophisticated than we've seen from Al-Qaeda in some years outside of territories where they have a strong presence. So, you know, this is pretty significant event to be happening in a Western country. It requires a lot of coordination and, you know, certainly the reports indicate quite a few people were involved too.
In some ways, is it reminiscent of what played out in Mumbai with the terrorist attacks there?
Yeah, there's very much, you know, a feeling that this is the Mumbai model, and after the Mumbai attacks, we really, everybody was kind of concerned that this was going to be the wave of the future, and, you know, it didn't start to play out immediately, but this is obviously a big concern. This kind of attack is very difficult to prevent. It requires a lot from responders, and a lot of people can die. And it's different from the old Al-Qaeda-style attacks, which, you know, used to be too clever for their own good, basically. The attacks that Al-Qaeda traditionally planned were very complex. They used bombs and components that could fail. This kind of attack is much more reliable to produce casualties.
Just last month, the director of French intelligence was in the U.S. for a panel, and he noted that with the CIA help, with the help of the NSA, that in the past month, the intelligence service there had stopped a number of attacks, but he also said you can't stop everything.
Well, it's true that you can't stop everything. Now, an attack on this scale offers a lot more opportunities for prevention. The more people who are involved in a plot, the more opportunities there are that somebody's going to hear about it, somebody's going to talk to the wrong person. Based on what we're seeing right now, and we're still waiting to find out what the exact scope of this, but an attack of this size involving this many people is at very high risk of being exposed. So the fact that it wasn't suggests that they're really operating with a very high level of discipline.
Is part of the difficulty, too, some of the changes that terrorists have made, that they've changed since the revelations from the Snowden disclosures and WikiLeaks, as that information got out about some of the methods that were being used?
I'd say it's much too soon to say anything about that. I mean, the most reliable way to you know, avoid detection is not to talk on an electronic device. So, and we had seen previous efforts at encryption. So, I think, there's really no way to know about that right now.
Anything else we should be looking out for in the coming hours, in the coming days?
Well, if this is ISIS, it's the third major attack in the last month. So, you know, this is obviously some concern. There's always been the possibility that ISIS was going to strike outside of its territories. They have everything they need for it. They have money and manpower. And, you know, I think that there has been a certain amount of complacency about their ability to carry out a complex attack in the West. And what we've seen in the last, just, you know, we've seen the Russian plane bombing, we've seen the Hezbollah bombing, and now we're seeing this. These are all pretty sophisticated attacks. So I think that, you know, people have talked about this as if it's like a new phase for ISIS or ISIS having new capabilities. I think that they had these capabilities all along, and I think we just kind of took for granted that something significant wasn't going to happen. But again, you know, we need to wait and find out for certain that ISIS is behind that. That's not known for sure at this point.
Is there anything on Twitter yet, anything you're seeing on social media, that even if the Islamic State isn't responsible for it, that its followers, its fanboys have picked up on at this point?
I saw a very high volume of people talking about it, higher than I've seen in previous terrorist attacks. And I think part of that may be the fact that since ISIS has carried out and claimed two major terrorist attacks in the last month, that its supporters may be more primed to get excited when they see something like this, because of those two attacks. I don't know that the activity I'm seeing is indicative of ISIS is having responsibility for it.
That is Brookings Institution terror analyst J.M. Berger. He was speaking via Skype with VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden. The Paris publication Le Monde is reporting that seven locations were targeted in Friday night's attack. Among them were restaurants and bars in a crowded central area of the French capital near the Place de République. Freelance journalist Clea Broadhurst lives near there and speaks with my colleague Peter Heinlein.
I've been in Paris for 6 months, and I literally heard the whole thing. It happened, I don't know, 50 meters away from my place. It was quite dreadful. Actually, I thought it was a firework going on. And
What were you doing, and what did you hear? How long did it go on?
It went on for 5 minutes, like 5 full minutes. I was actually at home. I hear this huge firework going down, and so I go on the website on the internet, and I see that there's a shooting happening in the bar, like around my corner. Literally, that's where there was four dead. And now I'm heading to the McDonald's 50 meters away from my place, where they found a car crumbled with bullets everywhere, apparently. So I'm heading there. The security is in place. I won't be able to go and see much, but at least, yeah, I can tell what's happening. It's crazy. There's a lot of people here. Police, a lot of police cars, firework, caravan.
What location are you at? There are, I think, at least three or four locations in the city where things are happening.
I'm where the first one happened. Rue Bichat. That's where I live. So, the very first one that was there. Do you have a map of the shootings in front of you?
No, I don't right now. But you can just describe exactly or a little bit about where it is, and then what you're seeing.
Do you know where République is?
Yes.
That's literally where it is. Then.
Okay.
We're 100 meters from République. That's where the first attack happened. And then apparently there was simultaneous shootings in probably 1 kilometer away from here. And then another one, literally another kilometer from where I am now, where they have the hostages in the concert place called the Bataclan.
Mm-hmm. What's the mood? I mean, there are a lot of other people on the street. What's going on with them?
Everyone's panicking. Everyone's just wondering what's happening, because it's Charlie all over again. It's just exactly like Charlie all over again. So basically, people are just frightened, and people are talking about it being, you know, ISIS or whatever. Because apparently, some witness said during the first shooting that the one of the guy who shot at people said Allahu Akbar. We have no way of verifying this information, so I wouldn't go that far.
That is Clea Broadhurst. She is a freelance journalist, and she was speaking from where she lives, which is very near the Place de République, where she said one of the attacks took place. Clea was on the line with International Edition's Peter Heinlein. My colleague David Byrd caught up with another person in Paris about what's been happening there in recent hours. He is American Patrick Kennedy, who is a professor at Sciences Po in Paris.
I was sitting in a bar, in a little cafe near the Canal District, which is in the 10th District, and I was with a friend of mine, and we were having drinks, and, you know, it was all of a sudden it started with a commotion at the other end of the bar. I saw a few people hugging. I knew something was wrong, and people started talking about some kind of incident going on, and everyone started getting on their phones, and I got a few phone calls asking if I was safe, and I wasn't really quite clear what was going on. And I said, yeah, of course I'm safe. I'm fine. What's going on? But the more as minutes unfolded, you know, it became clear that something was pretty serious happening around Paris. We started hearing sirens. We started hearing helicopters. Police started emerging because I'm in the area pretty much where I think one of the attacks occurred. And then someone, I think, who worked for the bar, one of the bartenders, said, listen, everyone needs to stay here. We spoke with one of the policemen. We're basically locking everyone down. So until we figure out more information, everyone's required to stay here and kind of be safe. So it was very unclear exactly what was going on, but it was clear that something very serious was happening. And so there was a sense of kind of panic, of uncertainty. And so everyone's kind of been on their phones and talking on their cell phones and trying to figure out exactly what's been going on. So I was basically locked in a bar for about an hour until I was allowed to leave just for a few minutes.
And you went to the friend's house in the 10th arrondissement, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
And what are the French officials saying to do now? Do they want everyone to stay in their homes overnight until the sun comes up?
Yes, they want everyone to stay where they are. I'm spoken to a lot of friends that are actually, it's Friday night, you know, it's a nice night in Paris. They're worried about having to sleep in the bars that they're in. I mean, not just in the tents, but, you know, all around the entire city is pretty much on lockdown right now. So basically they're informing us to stay in, to be safe, and to not leave under any circumstances. So, like I said, I've got a number of friends that are in the bars, and they're afraid that they're not going to be able to leave for the night. And so it's just a matter of getting information out there, telling everyone we're safe, kind of going from there.
As an American in Paris, you have a unique perspective on this. Back in January, there were the Charlie Hebdo attacks and the attacks at the kosher grocery. What are your French friends saying about tonight's attack? What are they saying as far as their emotional reaction?
It seems, you know, initially, there's a sense of frustration. You know, I saw actually a bar fight or kind of someone kind of screaming at each other right when I walked outside. And there's just a kind of disillusionment, a sense of anger and frustration, I think, in the early stages, especially when the information is not very clear. There's just kind of an uncertainty. There's a fear. There's a sadness, you know, and especially when you start mixing this in the nightlife in Paris. It's kind of a weird situation. So, you know, as more information trickles in, I think, you know, people are having conversations around the bar, and there's a few arguments in terms of what needs to be done and kind of, you know, what needs to happen from here. But I really kind of feel a sense it's very emotional here right now. You know, I saw a few people kind of crying as they had reports, and you could tell that perhaps they knew people in the area and they were really kind of scared. So there's just kind of this overwhelming sense of frustration, of emotion. I'm not really sure what emotion there is, but it's just a process of trying to figure out exactly what was happening. Why was this happening again in Paris after it happened so recently?
As Patrick Kennedy is a professor at Sciences Po in Paris, he was speaking with International Edition's David Byrd. Reiterating, so far no group has claimed responsibility for Friday's attacks in Paris, but some have said the attacks were very much like those the Islamic State might carry out. The attackers Friday night went after so-called soft targets, which is what the Islamic State has instructed its fighters who return to their homelands to do. I spoke with Thomas Sanderson, director of the Transnational Threats Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, who concurs that the Friday targets were indeed soft targets.
Indeed, they were, and this is the problem with return fighters who are very much skilled in urban combat. This would be a very, very simple thing for them to do, given that they would have come from the streets of Raqqa or Aleppo or other places where they would have engaged other militant groups and Syrian security services, and even on occasion U.S. or other forces in small battles. So any returning fighter could do this with ease. Now, others who are inspired individuals without that experience could also do this with ease, just not with the same level of effectiveness as a returning fighter.
We always wonder how someone, in a logical manner of thinking, how someone could leave a country, go be with terrorists, and come back into the same country they left. How does that happen?
Well, you're suggesting that these individuals have a great sense of patriotism for France or loyalty to it, and then go to the battlefield and then turn on their country. I think a lot of them were never really integrated in France, and they are pushed to the battlefield by a number of conditions at home, but also pulled to the battlefield by a sense to right a wrong or to achieve some sort of personal goal, a sense of purpose, in any respect, a radical vision of religion, of culture. So lots of factors on both ends that end up bringing someone to the battlefield and making them a lethal tool back home with no qualms about killing innocent civilians and no sense of, oh, I'm turning on my country. You know, these are very likely individuals who were born in the region or were born to parents who immigrated to France. And for any number of the reasons I just pointed out, have sought to kill French citizens and others in effort to attain the goals that they may have.
We've heard that France was on high alert, actually preparing for something like this, but how do you prepare for as many as 7 attacks that occur all at the same time?
Well, you don't. The Charlie Hebdo attack happened in January, and of course there's been heightened vigilance, but you can't maintain that 24/7 all the time. Very, very difficult. And when nothing happens for several months, people let their guard down. Now, the French are better than basically anyone around the globe at police work, at intelligence. They've had a lot of bad experience in this, and they've learned a lot, and they have great capabilities on the intelligence side, on the law enforcement side, on the tactical side. So even for a country as effective as France, with the tools they have, you're just never going to be able to anticipate all threats, investigate all of the potential suspects or perpetrators of something like this. You're not going to have perfect security in a democracy. You don't have it in even an authoritarian state. So, expectations have to be moderated in what countries can do.
Thomas Sanderson is director of Transnational Threats Program at the Centers for Strategic and International Studies. Well, as you might imagine, lots of volume on social media about the events in Paris in recent hours. International Edition's Peter Heinlein is here to talk about it all. What you got, Pete?
Thank you, Steve. As you know, social media has really come into its own as the driver of information at times like this. News organizations like VOA have been flooding the web with tweets since the first realization that this was more than just a random shooting. Almost immediately, video was posted on Twitter and Facebook from the Stade de France, where that soccer match between France and Germany was in progress. One clip appeared to capture the sound of an explosion. On other videos, you can hear what appear to be shots. At several places, I saw tweeters urging people not to show live pictures. They were saying, "Stop posting pictures of Paris. The police asked not to because it shows police positioning. Pass it on." Now, there are many Twitter handles, such as hashtag PrayForParis, hashtag FranceUnderAttack, hashtag ParisIsBurning. The Paris is Burning feed was being used by people sharing information on how to help victims, how to locate friends, and to express their sympathies. Facebook activated a safety check that allows people in Paris to check in and mark themselves as safe, which then allows their friends on the social network to see that they're okay. The U.S. banned Eagles of Death Metal, which was giving a concert at the Bataclan Concert Hall, has been communicating with its fans through Facebook, saying it's trying to determine the safety and whereabouts of its family and friends there. On the hashtag PrayForParis, Badr al-Abdulgader posted a verse from the Quran saying, "Whoever kills an innocent person, it's as if he's killed all of humanity." And one very interesting exchange seen on Twitter began from the account of New York Times World, which tweeted, "Silent gunmen executed people in the Bataclan," witness says. In reply, the French ambassador to the United States, Gerard Araud, tweeted, "Not executed, please, murdered." Wow. Steve?
Powerful, powerful, powerful. Yes, social media takes you there. International Edition's Peter Heinlein. So many thanks, Pete. You know, you can follow International Edition on Twitter. Our handle there is VOA_IE, and of course on Facebook at VOA Asia. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America today for International Edition's special programming on the attacks in Paris. There will be more International Editions on the Paris attacks later today at 12 hours, 17 and 22 hours Universal Time. And as always, you can find out more at our website, voanews.com. For our director, Diane Gao, our engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman, I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
What drives people, especially young men and women, to join brutal and exploitative terrorist groups like ISIL or Boko Haram? We must better understand these drivers if we are to counteract the ability of terrorists to recruit new members and prevent the formation of similar groups in the future. Individuals, even entire communities, may align with violent extremist groups for many complex reasons. Those who feel marginalized by society on the basis of politics, religious convictions, social or economic status, or other grievances may find terrorist propaganda persuasive and look to find meaning and acceptance within terrorist groups, which often provide a storyline that allows them to turn violence inflicted on the society that had not fully accepted them. On a higher level, individuals and communities may seek meaning in radical ideologies and those who espouse them that seem to meet their needs for a purpose or identity. This means that in order to blunt the appeal of violent terrorist groups, we must find ways to fill unmet human needs. These can range from providing security to expanding economic options to giving marginalized communities a greater stake in determining their political future, said Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Sarah Sewell. So we are increasing our work toward an approach to countering violent extremism that better prevents individuals and communities from wanting to align with terrorism in the first place. This includes building trust. It includes empowering a broader range of people, including civil society, businesses, religious leaders, women, youth, international bodies, and former violent extremists to counter the false promises of groups such as ISIL and build more resilient communities. And it involves building a network of global partners, including regional and multilateral institutions such as the Arab League, United Nations, World Bank, African Union, and World Economic Forum, to reinforce the civilian-led components of this approach. In short, if we can remove or lessen the most insistent factors that motivate people to turn toward violence, then we can start replacing destructive ideas that uphold terrorism as a means of change with an avenue toward individual and community improvement and hope for a better future. As President Barack Obama said, "Ideologies are not defeated with guns. They're defeated by better ideas, a more attractive and compelling vision."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.